Are you recruiting officer?
Yes, oh. I have a recruiting officer. Ah, Baruch Hashem. Okay, welcome to the newcomers, new chevra. So this is the third week of our experiment, or as some of you would say, experiment. We're thinking about our experience of tefillah, and we looked at it so far from two different perspectives. We had Rav Cook's observation that our neshama is always davening. Inside, there's something which is always striving to be connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Last week, we introduced Rav Shimshon Pinkus, who focused on the central core concept of tefillah as standing before Hashem, being in the presence of God. And tonight, we meet a new person for our third perspective on tefillah. We get a glimpse into the diary of a man who has truly shaped the religious life of many, many observant Jews in recent memory, probably more than he did in his own lifetime. And his Yahrzeit was just recently on the fourth day of Cheshvan. That is the Holy Reb Klonim is Kalman Shapira Hashem Yikom Domo Sklus Yogan Elena, the Pia Sets and the Rebbe. Now, this piece that you have in front of you is itself historically an incredible piece. Because even though the Rebbe published the Chovas HaTalmidim, his work for students before the war, he, in the early 1930s, he wrote a personal diary which he kept with him, in addition to a manuscript which was a follow-up to the work for students, the work for older people called Hacharas Avreichim, as well as during the war when he wrote down his Shabbos sermons, which were later published as the Eish Kodesh. This collection of manuscripts, which was not just the Eish Kodesh, which was also his diary, were buried in the same milk can, with likely by the Onik Shabbos archives, with the help of the late the martyr of Shimon Huberband. Thank you. So this diary, the pieces of this diary, is from that same collection of documents of the Rebbe from that was found after the war in 1950. It's from that same can, but this actually predates the war. And in this diary, which he calls Tzav Viziras, which is a play on a Talmudic term, command and strengthen and give enthusiasm, the Rebbe has a lot of inspirational ideas. But this particular concept, it's amazing, and it really resonated with me in the realm of tefillah, on a very basic human level. The Rebbe had remarkable psychological insight into people. You could tell that from the way that he relates to teenagers in the Chovas HaTalmidim. He has incredible insight into people, and he has the following observation about tefillah, which, if we think about it in this way, can make tefillah, on the most basic level, a tremendously cathartic experience about how we can feel about tefillah, what tefillah does for us. And it's not supposed to be a self-serving exercise, but it can be. And think about how we feel when we're finished with davening. You know, what is the litmus test potentially of davening? How you feel afterwards, right? Part of this question is what's our reflection on davening afterwards? Is our reflection on davening afterwards that it didn't exist, that it was like a blip on the radar screen? Or is there something that happens through the process of davening that affects us? What is the roshem of davening that it leaves on us? So obviously there's a spiritual roshem, and during davening we have a barometer. By the way, that's part of the first week we spoke about the word tefillah. Tefillah coming from the word ro'ofanecha lo filalti, to dream for something. That's why tefillah is a good barometer for ourselves, because if there's a part of davening that we connect to, that means that it's obviously important to us. And if it's a part that we don't connect to and we're not having kavanah, that's a good indication that it's not so, we don't dream about it so much. You know, people who are obsessed and so fixated on the centrality of Yerushalayim and religious Zionism, when they say Es Tzemach David, and when they say V'li Yerushalayim, that resonates a lot. And if it doesn't resonate, that's a good indicator that that's probably not so high on the priority list. But when somebody's saying Shemoneh Esrei in the waiting room in Evanston Hospital, you can bet your last dollar that the bracha of Refa'inu is going to register big time. Right? So that's part of how tefillah is a reflection on us. What I want to take out of this piece tonight is what the Rebbe gives us, an incredible psychological insight. When we finish this tonight, we're like, you know what? It's a good thing to think about tefillah in this frame, and then thinking about how our experience matches up with this. So let's get straight to it. He says, there is an expression that appears in a pasuk. Let's start with the third line here on the right hand column, Shin Chavav, second paragraph. Drashas Chazal al pasuk. Da'aga belev ish, yashchena, yasichena la'achirim. What happens when a person has a worry? When we have anxiety about something? When we're concerned about something? What do we do? So the Gemara says in Sanhedrin that this pasuk can be read in two ways. It can be read, you see the first way it's read with the nekuda? How does it read the first way? Where's the dot? In the three-letter shin, the first time it's read, what's that? You see what it is?
It's a shin, not a sin.
Exactly. The first time is with a shin, the second time is with a sin. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, pay close attention to that dot. Da'aga belev ish, on the third line of the Pasuk HaMishlei, third line going into the fourth line of the second column. What does it mean, yashchena? Yashchena means you put it out of your mind. So Dr. Pelkovitz calls these the distractors. You ever go to a shiva house? The din is, when you go to a shiva house, you're not supposed to open your mouth until you are acknowledged, and the Avel speaks. Why is that? Because the Avel could be in one of two moods. He might be, or she might be, in the mood of Yashchena. I want a distraction. I need a break. So you sit down at the shiva house, and the Avel says, you wouldn't believe what happened yesterday with the kids. They came home, they said the most hilarious thing. Why do they do that? Why does the Avol do that?
Yashchena.
Right? That's the Yashchena that says, I can't deal with this right now. I need a break. Let's put it out of my mind. Dr. Pelkovitz talks a lot about this in terms of people, because we dealt with trauma. So some people, when they deal with trauma, it applies to bereavement, it applies to trauma, anxiety, it's Yashchena. They don't want to talk about it. And then there are others who are yesichena. They want to talk about it. And by the way, as Dr. Pelkovitz points out, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's two different people. It could be the same person in a different place, at a different time, at a different stage. Sometimes we feel like yeshchena, I can't deal with it. I have this monster rock that's hanging over me, I can't deal with it. Yeshchena, put it away. And other times it's yesichena. It might be the same issue in a different time. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin uses it in two different ways. But the Rebbe says, let's look at the second way, what we call the attenders. The distractors say, Yashchena, put it out of my head. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to think about it. But the attenders say, Yesichena, I'm going to feel much better if I talk about it. He says, V'lo amru, the Gemara does not say, it doesn't say, when you go to talk to somebody and they have an issue, the Gemara doesn't say, you know how you can make that person feel better? It doesn't say, talk to them or listen to them. What does the Gemara say? It's focusing not on the listener, on the person who's paying the shiva call, on the person whose spouse is having a difficult time, whatever it is. It's talking to the person themselves with the anxiety. Meaning, of course, you need to be a listener for that person. But who's the focus? The focus is on the ish. It's mipnei ki hadibur ba'atzmo kocho gadol. The Rebbe writes something so incredible. If you look, by the way, in the research, John Gottman has research about this idea. What does the Rebbe say? That the concept of dibur has incredible power. Just talking it out with someone, it's so cathartic. Meaning, that person, you could be talking to somebody, I don't want to say this ever happened, but I'm sitting next to someone, they happen to have dark brown blonde hair, and we're sitting talking to each other, and I'm talking, and that person on the second part of the couch, maybe they're, the Gemara calls that misnamnim. They're like, the Gemara says, they're kind of awake, they're kind of a shtickle, not awake. Then maybe they, you know, if you ask them, they say, yes, I'm awake, but you know they're totally not awake. And you unburden yourself and you talk about the frustration that you had that day. Even though that person who's sitting next to you, again, it's a fictitious description here, they're not lemaisa, let's be honest. Are they listening? They're not listening. They're fast asleep. But you know what? I still feel better afterwards. I do. Because I was able to unburden what was on my chest. Even if the next morning I'll say, thank you so much for listening. And she'll say, you're welcome. Right? But lemaisa, says the Rebbe, adibur ba'atzmo kocho gadol. The fact that we can talk it out, just the act of talking it out, why is it often that people go for counseling or therapy? Oftentimes, the therapist is just there to do one thing, just to listen. Dr. Pelkovitz told us he once had a case of somebody, a patient who he was seeing, who he gave them an etza. He said he had a particular issue. He said, you know what the best thing is? You should write this down and send me a fax. Just put it down and send me a fax. He describes how his fax machine at random hours of day or night was spewing pages and pages from this patient. But that was the way that the patient unburdened themselves. Just talking it out. Says the Rebbe, Lohotzi es hacharzubos mikirvei hanefesh, to let out the angst from our soul, the worries. And so many of us, every day when we get up, we have things that we're worried about. Whether it's our parnasa, our health, people that we're concerned about, our children, our grandparents, our friends, our neighbors. What's the worst thing that can happen, says the Rebbe? Ulevilti tes, not to allow lehisaser, that it should kind of scurry into the hidden closet. Ulekanin boshum akmimus. You know what happens? What's bad is when we have worry, we have anxiety, and it starts to boil up inside, and we don't let it out. Because then it starts to fester, and it wells up. So what do? The antidote to that is yesichena la'acherim, is to talk about it to someone, to find someone who's willing to listen. That's why oftentimes people pay someone just to listen, just be a listener, because it makes us feel better, it helps us. U'kamo sha'amru be'abal shem tov zal, al nafshi yotza bedabro. The pasuk says nafshi yotza bedabro. That expression usually means when God spoke, our soul went out. But the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh says, you know what it means? When I spoke, when someone spoke, they let their soul out. They got a breath of fresh air just by being able to talk. Isn't that one of the most difficult things of a person who is lonely? Not so much that they're alone, but they have no one to talk to. And so very often, if somebody is alone, what's the biggest chesed that could be done for them? To give them an opportunity to talk. And I'm sure everybody in this room has found this in their own experience in different ways, that you pick up the phone to call somebody, all the person wants to do is to tell you what's going on. It's the biggest chesed to call that person. They say, oh, I have to tell you what happened. They haven't had a chance to talk to anyone. Especially if it's something that they're struggling with, that they're frustrated about. They just want to get it out. Ukumo shehaish, just like a person, zos gamba atzmo im yeshlo da'aga v'kas, if a person has a worry or an anger or a frustration, az af kishedomu sheshacha kasa v'dagasa mikol makom rak me'in av nistera. Sometimes the Rebbe says that we have feelings that we say, oh, I'm over it. How many times do we tell us this? Ah, I'm over it. The Rebbe says, are you really over it? Or you've just put it out of your immediate consciousness, but it's still there. It's still bothering you. And it bubbles up, you know, when we throw in the kitchen sink, that it's the first thing to come up. He says, "Avo bekerav hanafsho haki nistar." But in this extreme language, the vomit is still hiding in there, in our soul. Va'ya im tosafna da'agos elu. What happens when we increase the stress, when we increase the anxiety, and it's still buried in the bottom? What's going to happen? It's going to explode. Says the Rebbe, and this is incredibly, I'm telling you, this is a deep psychological insight, second to last line, middle of the line. V'zeh yisod ba'alei hamara shchora. This is the secret of people who suffer with clinical depression. Shene'etzavim pisom, that they're subtly depressed. Why are they subtly depressed, the Rebbe says? They're walking along, everything is fine, and then suddenly they just get depressed. Where did that come from? He says, you know where it came from? Because in their subconscious, there are these unresolved issues. There are these stresses that they never talked about, they never addressed. So they wait there dormant until the point where they, all of a sudden, there's some catalyst, there's something that sets them off, and it all comes out. Masha ein kein, it's not the same thing, says the Rebbe, im yesh lo ohei v'rea, if a person has a friend, or someone who loves them and they love. And what do? It's top line, v'hum is marmer lefon aval da'agaso. And you can, lis marmer means you can let it out, you can talk freely, you can share al da'agaso on your worries. U'mekayim bezed da'aga b'lev ish yesichen al achayim. And by doing that, you fulfill this insight of Chazal, top left column, second line. Margish tekef. What do you feel immediately? Shikamo even golal me'al libo, that you rolled a stone off of your chest. Ve'esta agasa mikarev nafsho akar. I don't know if any of you can relate to this thesis, this yesod, but it definitely resonates with me. I could see it in myself. I could see it in the experience that I have with other people, whether our family issues, health issues, work issues, being able to talk it out. Says the Rebbe, now, if we just add to this equation what we said last week, last week's yesod from Rav Shimshon Pinkus was to remember that God is real and that talking to God is a real experience. And that it's going to take us time and practice and strengthening our spiritual muscles to come to that realization in a mamish way. But if we really felt that God was listening to us, then how would that play into this thesis?
This is directly related to lack of emuna b'tachon.
Meaning?
If this person has emuna b'tachon, and believe that everything comes from Hashem, and they won't have these da'yas that are pushing them up.
Okay, so first of all, as David is pointing out, there's an element of where is the yesod, where is the da'aga coming from? Right? What's the shorish of the da'aga? That's Aleph. But Beis, let's take it a step further. What's that?
Even if you don't have anybody else there, you have Hashem to listen. And if you feel like Hashem's the person listening, you can unburden your heart like Chana did. And
right? That, isn't that what Chana...
But he didn't suggest doing that.
What's that?
He says, go find a person to talk.
1 second. That's only... So we set it up. Did you look at this before?
No.
So now, says the Rebbe, V'ha'im yesh lecha oei v'rea ka'avicha shabbat shamayim?
Damn correct.
Stole. Right? If we take what we said last week, that God is mamish real, that God is with us, and this is the challenge of self-esteem, to believe and to remind ourselves that we are worthy that the Rabbonu Shalom should be with us. That was the yesod of last week. That we should believe in ourselves that the Rabbonu Shalom listens to us and cares about us and is with us. Do you have anybody better to talk about it with? Asher ramzu chazal alav yizbarach haster es atzmacha. You close yourself in the hidden place becheder miyuchad im efshalacha. In a quiet spot. And who's in that closet with you? It's only you and the Rabbonu Shalom. V'imlav, and if not, hasev panecha el hakir, turn to the wall. V'tzayir b'machshavtecha, and imagine in your mind, sha'ata omid lefnei kisei kavod yisbarach, that you are standing before the seat of God. Imagine standing at the Kotel. We have a different feeling when we daven at the Kotel than when we daven anywhere else. I shouldn't say we have that, but I have had that, and I'm sure many people have that. Because you feel the kirvas Elokim, you feel the presence of the Ribono Shalom Mamish. So when you talk at the Kotel, it's an amazing thing. You have people, you take an imaginary friend, right? You would say that guy's probably, you know, has lost his marbles talking to an imaginary friend. And yet, you could take people, oftentimes what you call, and the chitzonius, secular people or chiloni people, they come, they stand in front of a pile of rocks from 2,000 years ago and they start talking. And then they write something on a piece of paper and they leave it there. Strangest thing. Then you see people who walk up and they start talking and then they start crying. Start crying. You see this? People start crying standing at a pile of stones. It's a pile of digazach. Why are they crying? Because they mamish feel that the Ribono Shel Olam is so near to them. They feel that closeness. We feel it when we have that, those of us who have that opportunity, that bracha, to once to go daven to the Kotel. So imagine if we could create that experience for ourselves when we daven Shemoneh Esrei. That we have a different makom for ourselves. You know, there's a reason that in many shulin, they have windows at the front, patterned after the story with Daniel, that he would open the window and daven to Yerushalayim. Why does he do that? Why do you have windows in the front? Many shuls have 12 windows. Why do you have windows? It's trying to get us to reach that place. To close my eyes or to look into my siddur and say, I'm mamish standing before the Ribono Shel Olam right now. Ata omi lefnei kisei kavodo v'shofech lefanav es libcha b'siach u'tfila kefi she'ole al libcha b'chol lashon sh'ata shomea. And by opening up to Hashem in any language, you're building that kesher of tefillah. And that can be in the middle of Shema Koleinu, or it could be in the middle of any moment. This is what we could talk about in terms of the realm of hisbodidus. You can have hisbodidus. Hisbodidus is great, especially when you're sitting in traffic, when there's nobody else in the car. So you've heard the news cycle. In certain places, you give them 22 minutes and they give you the world. Not in Chicago, but in other places. I don't want to feel bad that we're not getting 22 minutes and getting the world. But in some places, you can listen to the whole news cycle in 22 minutes. And you've gone through every other chiddush, all the phone calls that you could have made with the hands free. You've eaten breakfast, shaved, everything. You're still sitting in traffic. So imagine, says the rabbi, you can have hisbodidus, what Rav Nachman Mebreslov would have had to go out to the forest, you can have sitting in the car on the 94, on the 90. Because imagine if you just remember that the Ribono Shel Olam is there all the time, then the experience of tefillah, it now breaks out of just the mizgeret of three times a day. I look at the other seat and I say, ah, the Ribono Shel Olam, I'm appreciative that you're taking this trip with me today. What should I do now? How do I act like a godly person now? How do I not flip off the guy next to me who just cut me off on the, you know, whatever it's going to be. But how do I live with the Ribono Shel Olam with me all the time? And part of that is talking to him. And the Rebbe goes even further. And he says, V'im lo hurgalta oz od b'chazos. If you don't have experience with this, no problem. Hineni roshim lecha siach kazeh. I'm going to write for you an example of a personal prayer that you could give. And so the next section is his personal tefillah that he wrote. He says, Ribono Shel Olam, you took me from nothing, you created me, and you see that I'm trying, that I want to succeed, etc. Or the second paragraph, the end paragraph, Tohor Matar, Mama Odi Smogivimas Libi Bikiri Balos Aldetia Shadarko Shal Ish Imrakas Khatsirovis Base Menake. But I'm worried about the fact that I can't reach you and I want to try to find ways to connect to godliness. It's almost a tefillah before a tefillah. But the yesod of this is that when we experience davening, If we're thinking about it as if we're talking to kivyachol, another person, how do we feel when we finish davening? We feel like, oh, wherever that da'aga came from, we've been able to lighten it a lot. We're in the middle of a stressful situation. What's the best thing we could do? Is go daven. Is to take a step back and talk to the Rosh Hashanah about, I'm feeling that I'm having a hard time. I'm having a hard time. And I just want you to know, Rabboni Shalom, that I'm having a hard time. And this is why I'm having a hard time. Because I have this lachatz, or that pressure, or this other issue. And when you finish, what is the Rabboni Shalom referred to as? He's not referred to as an ona tefillah. He's referred to as shomea tefillah. Because just in the act of listening to us, the fact that the Rabboni Shalom gives us a listening ear, that gives us a tremendous tova. It gives us the opportunity of unburdening ourselves. And the thing is that we do this, but we don't take it seriously enough. We don't realize that we're doing it. We do it because if anybody were to see you in, I don't know, you see sometimes Terminal 3, K5, a guy standing on the side. No, but no gate departing from gate 5, no flights, American Airlines, they finished their flight. K5, you see a guy standing, especially if it's in the early morning, wearing a talus and tefillin and shaking and murmuring. So the person obviously believes that there's a meaning to what they're doing. Otherwise, no person in their right mind would do that, right? If a normal, regular person looked over and asked, sir, what are you doing? How would you explain that to them? Right? What's that?
Can't talk to her about me.
Right. So what are we doing? We're having a conversation with the Rabboni Shalom, but what is our job as we're learning this? It's to remind ourselves that, wait, we're actually, that we should really, really, really believe that we're having a conversation with the Rabboni Shalom. Because if we really do believe that we are having that conversation, we should feel differently after we finish the conversation than before. The same way that when we finish unburdening ourselves to someone, that da'aga b'levish yaschena yasichena la'achirim, it has an effect on us. So a good indicator of what is a good tefillah is how we feel afterwards. It's, do we feel like, oh, you know what? I really got all my issues off my chest and now I can move on. You know, I can start my day. Or Ma'ariv comes, I finished my day and I can say to the Rabboni Shalom, thank you for helping me today. It was a beautiful day. Or thank you for being behind me today, but today was really a crummy day. Today was miserable. Let me tell you why it was so bad. Let me tell you what was such a struggle. And just putting it out there. Or mincha, which is the most intense, is I'm in the middle of this call, but I'm going to hang it up because it's very important for me to touch base with you. The whole, right?
I have to done right now.
Yes. That's the Yitzchak, Vayetze Yitzchak, L'suach Basadah. But I think this insight of what tefillah can be, if we take it seriously, it can change our whole experience. Because it reminds us that as the Shomea tefillah, there's nothing that could be more cathartic than talking to the Rabboni Shalom. Doesn't mean that he's going to answer us. Doesn't mean that he's going to respond, certainly not necessarily in the way that we want. And Dov brought this up last time. What happens when you keep talking to the Rabboni Shalom and you keep saying no? But it doesn't mean that the Rabboni Shalom is not listening. Right? That's the unanswered prayers question. But even the opportunity, and even thinking in that, Rachmana Litzlan, that very, very difficult situation, what does it make us feel that at least we know that there's someone who can listen to us? Doesn't it make us feel better rather than feeling helpless? Right? Doesn't it gives us a way? The Rebbe is talking mamash on the most basic human level, the way that we can express what we're feeling when we're faced with such a terrible challenge. And so even when we come back and we say, well, the answer was no, but we think about what are we going to do? Well, at least we can talk it out with someone. It's that channel that we can open up. And then I'll just end with one last point, which is that the importance of keeping this channel open, even when we don't necessarily have the best davening, is important, because then when we do need to have that channel, we have it. You have somebody who's going through a difficult time, but they never experienced tefillah, or their tefillah is dead and it's rote, or they never had a conversation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then they're searching for a way to do that. Then they're looking for tefillah, but they don't have the kalim. We have a blessing that we daven 3 times a day. It's not always the strongest tefillah, it's not always with this consciousness, but we should recognize that the structure of tefillah that we have, that gift, that opens this channel up. You know, not every tefillah, we're going to walk out afterwards and say, oh, I really feel that was a catharsis. I talked to God. I unburdened everything. And it's going to be much lighter on the stress level afterwards. But at least we have that mechanism. We know where to go. You know, the best place to go when we're dealing with these kinds of challenges is to a sitter, to a tehillim, to a shul. You know, imagine if people we knew in different situations had this tool at their ready. Wouldn't it make a big difference in their lives? We come at it from the opposite challenge, which is that we're so used to it and we struggle to find the meaning in it, and we've lost a lot of the sparkle of it, that, you know, we're like, well, how do we find meaning in tefillah? What we're doing through this limud, what the Rebbe is telling us, is say, wait a second, you have a gift. Someone who's looking to listen to you, realize that that's what the gift is about. And that when you go through the experience of tefillah, remembering that Hashem is there listening to you, you can actually be honest about what's going on in your life, and that will have an effect on you. So thinking about tefillah in this way, to me, was very revolutionary. It's, I think, a very deep psychological insight, and it can give us a way to view tefillah as yet another opportunity to help ourselves in life, even just in the day-to-day things that we go through.
Does he go on to say that there's more than just this? This is the baseline and there's more?
So,
or is it the end all?
Oh, so this is definitely not the end all. This is, if you imagine tefillah as a ladder, so this is the first basic, it's almost the self-interest here. It's like, oh, you know, if nothing else, at least there's somebody who I can unburden myself to. But obviously the goal of the avoda of tefillah is going to be much higher. What does it mean to carve out a few minutes and to calibrate our religious lives? So then that's the next level of saying, well, now I can match up what I'm doing to what I should be doing. Tefillah as a barometer, as a reflection of standards in my life. And then, of course, it gets to a higher level, which is, well, my neshama is always davening. Well, I can actually, by doing this, take a break. Maybe one time we'll talk about the concept of makom. I can step out of everything that's going on in the world around me, and I can just have a few spiritual minutes. Just to have time with my neshama. So that's even a higher level. And then v'cheina v'cheina. But I think that this is a very interesting basic level of what's going on. And then later, the Rebbe says it's good to be specific. Tov l'forta, he says. It's good to identify what is it that's going on in my life that I should be talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu about. And this goes back to one other point, which is the challenge of the rigid nature of the Nusach HaTfilah has conditioned us away from this. So one of the things that we need to constantly be reinforcing and reminding ourselves and educating and inspiring ourselves to is, first of all, the rigid nature of tefillah is the scaffolding that gives us checkpoints to say, is this important, is that important? That's another discussion. But within that, we need to be innovating. We need to be connecting. So atachoni la'adam das, the idea of having insight, the ability to navigate a situation. You know, I might have a situation on my plate today that needs navigating. So before I say Baruch Ato Hashem Chonin Ados, you say in your own language, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm struggling with how to address this situation, or I've got a relationship that needs to be repaired. How do I navigate that? Or in Baruch Aleinu, I have a business question that I need Siyata Dishmaya. Or in Veli Rishalayim, how do I connect better to the national entity? You know, there are so many ways that if we, and hopefully over time, after this week, we'll decide if we want this experiment to continue, that we can look at specific sections of tefillah or specific tefillahs and delve into them and draw out some connection that we can then further in our own lives and figure out, well, Now that's another opportunity. I never saw it. So many of us, we've been davening for so long. But the opportunity to come back and say, where's the next level? Right? That's really what you're alluding to, is that there are so many more levels, both bichlal, but also befrat, in each component of the tefillah experience that we have. So we'll cast our ballots and decide where to go from here. What's that? Gustav Amar, if there's nothing better.